Welcome to Living in Hi-Fi. I'm Steve.
And I'm Flissy. This is a podcast about records. Today's album is Music for an Arabian Night by Ron Goodwin and his orchestra, a Capitol Records release from 1959, catalog number ST10251.
So I'm not sure where this album came from. Do you remember, Flissy?
I honestly don't remember, but I bought it for $3.50.
Well, what made you bring it out?
I bought this album because I am a collector of all kinds of belly dance music, whether it is actual belly dance music or not. If it looks like it could be a belly dance album, then I buy it. And this has like a lady sort of lounging on some steps, maybe. And I don't know. It looks like, Orientalist, Middle Eastern stuff. And so I bought it. And then I was going through my belly dance albums while I was sewing a costume a couple weeks ago. And this is one that I pulled out to listen to. And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about on the show.
All right. Well, I guess you've already started to tell us a little bit about the cover. So why don't you tell us the rest about what this album looks like, Fuzzy?
Yeah, so this is like Cheesecake kind of lounging on some steps, and it looks like she's wearing like a little sort of halter dress made out of sari fabric, and she's got like some smoky eyes and like staring into the camera, and there's a reflection of her in a pool beneath her, and it says, of course, Music for an Arabian Night, Ron Goodwin and his orchestra, as rich and exotic as the fabled splendors of the ancient East. And then on the back, it has just kind of like a sort of standard orientalist motif. It appears to be like a guy sitting in like sort of this draped clothing, sitting on a carpet, smoking a hookah with a plate of fruit nearby, and a lady in poofy harem pants and a little bra top with a veil around her face dancing for this guy who's kind of looking up at her. And then it has, I was laughing when I was reading this earlier because I was listening to this album in the car while I was driving around today. And I was like, man, like, this album makes me think of, like hummus and tapenade, like, really tame kind of Americanized Middle Eastern food. And it even says on here, like, maybe you don't know any harem girls, but your girlfriend might like to try a scarf dance to some exciting Arabic rhythms and lush Oriental melodies while you sip Turkish coffee and munch peeled grapes. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly kind of what this music sounds like. And then it has a listing of the tracks at the very bottom in all caps.
All right, well, should we get to our first clip?
Yeah, what's your pick?
Yeah, well, I guess my pick is the first track on side A. It is called Windows of the East. So let's take a listen. So what do you think of this song?
So this song has, I think it's got like this generic exotica vibe with its like mix of flute and bongos and conga drums, which I should note are not Middle Eastern percussion instruments, and this like big swell of string section. And to me, like that swelling string section is really typical of the Capitol pop orchestra. And all of these things mean that I really like this track.
Yeah, I really like this sort of, it has this like commanding piano intro that I thought was good.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, I mean, I thought that this song might be a good song to dance to. I'm not sure exactly what kind of dance. I guess a scarf dance, apparently.
Yeah, scarf dance, apparently.
But I don't know. I mean, I thought from this album, like, I don't know. I guess we'll get into it a little bit more later. But I thought that this was maybe the most Arabic sounding of the songs on this album. But even so, not really. Like, it sounded Arabic in the way that, I guess, Rimsky-Korsakov Scheherazade sounds Arabic, which is not really.
Yeah, it's a good point. This is actually, I would say, maybe inspired by a song by the Lebanese composers, the Rabani brothers, and the Arabic name for the song is Ya Mela Al-Ghosone.
So what can you tell us about this album, Felicity?
So I'll first tell you a little bit about Ron Goodwin. He was born February 17th, 1925 in Devon, England. And he started playing the piano and trumpet from age five. And during the onset of the World War II, his family moved to London and he started his own band during that time. And then by 1949, he started composing and arranging music for Polygon Records. And over his time working as an arranger, he made over 300 arrangements, including about 100 that were on the pop charts at the time. And in addition to doing arrangements for other artists and doing a little bit of songwriting, he also wrote over 70 film scores from 1958 until 1986. And this includes lots of movies, obviously, including the sci-fi cult classic, The Day of the Triffids.
The legendary Day of the Triffids.
Yeah. And as well as Alfred Hitchcock's Frenzy in 1972, I think.
Yeah, I'm very interested to go back and listen to the soundtrack from The Day of the Triffids because I remember the movie, but I really don't recall anything about the soundtrack.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about the soundtrack either. It sounds like he wrote a lot of scores for like science fiction and like suspense, and he did a couple horror movies too. He did The Village of the Damned and the follow-up to that, The Children of the Damned. So after this time, in the 80s, he mostly turned his attention to working full-time with orchestras and appearing as a guest conductor in orchestras all over the world. And he also, for over 30 years, he hosted these Christmas concerts in London, and apparently they sold out just about every year where he directed a symphony of Christmas songs, basically. And then he died in 2003. And so the deal with this album, I guess at some point, and I can't find any details about this, but at some point he went to Lebanon and met the Rabani brothers. So I guess that must have been in the 1950s sometime, but I don't know exactly when. And there were the Rabani brothers were Mansour and Asi, who were born in the 1920s. They also had a younger brother, named Elias, who was born in 1938. And even though he is a Rabani brother, he is not one of the Rabani brothers. So he's not like included in the musical title of the brothers. He's just a brother with a lowercase b, I guess you could say. Although he's also a musician in his own right. I guess he was, you know, Mansour and Asi, they were already in their teens when Elias was born. And so when they started making music together, Elias was not really in the picture yet. He wasn't old enough to be working with them. So I didn't realize initially, although I could have very quickly found out if I looked at the more closely at the actual record, but all but two of the songs on this album are Rabani Brothers compositions. And I think that's kind of tricky because I think I picked out this album to feature on the show because when I was listening to this, I'm like, this does not sound like Middle Eastern music whatsoever. This is like an excellent example of like the capital sound. And here, like, if you look on the actual disc, you'll see that the Rabbani brothers are credited as the songwriters, although they're not credited on the sleeve anywhere at all. So, like, now I think that's kind of interesting. Like, this does not sound like Arabic music to me. We can talk about that a little bit later, too. So the Rabbani brothers, they were born in the 1920s in the suburbs of Beirut. And in 1953, Asi Rabbani married the singer Fairuz. And she is a super famous singer, and they like kind of worked as a trio for many years until Asi died in 1986. And from then on, Elias and Mansour continued to write songs for Fairuz. And all three of these, I guess you could count all four of them as kind of a unit. They all wrote music, they performed songs, wrote plays, and a lot of the themes in their work is about family life and love and nationalism. So there, Lebanon has a lot of pride about the Rabbani brothers and about Fairuz.
So that gets into a little bit about what my confusion is here, and maybe you could clarify it for me, because a lot of the songs on this album, they sounded to me more like Eastern Mediterranean, like the Levant area, rather than, I guess, the Arabian Peninsula. And you knowing more about Arabic music, like, is the Levant area typically included in there?
That's such a difficult question. I really think it depends on who you ask and like, what is the context for things? Because if you say like, if you say belly dance, like that could include a huge geography. And if you talk about like Egyptian music, that's a specific thing. If you talk about Middle Eastern music, that's a specific thing. But that a lot of people say that, well, if you say Middle Eastern, then that excludes Northern Africa, or that excludes places like Turkey. And so a lot of belly dance lingo will say, I think, may not, or M-E-N-A-T, which means Middle East, North Africa, and Turkey, which kind of embodies all of that region. And even that like excludes like the Silk Road influence, where there would be, I think, maybe populations originated in people who were like marginalized in India and traveled across the Silk Road through places like Pakistan and Afghanistan and, across Europe into Turkey. So it's a really complicated question.
But with that, like, what percentage of that, or if any, would you refer to as Arabic music, or would you not refer to
that? I would not refer to that as Arabic music. I think I would refer to Arabic music being like Arabic language music.
I see. So, because that's where I got off, like, on this start here. I mean, it says music for an Arabian night, and so I sort of assumed that this was going to be, I guess. Well, I mean, there's like no vocals on it anywhere, but.
Right.
It didn't sound particularly Arabian to me, but
yeah. So I think if we listen to the next clip, we can talk about that a little bit more.
All right. Well, what did you pick, Flissy?
My pick is the first track on side B, and it's called Dancing Eyes.
All right. Let's take a listen. Thank you. right, so I liked this song. I think it stood out in the album because it had this sort of a jaunty feel to it. And I think it has a pretty good melody. And I guess you played for me a not Americanized version of it. And I have to say, you know, that sort of did, I think, give a little bit more credence to this album. That before this, I was sort of like viewing this album through sort of skeptical dancing eyes. But after that, it's like it was. I mean, it's a bit of a different arrangement, but it is that definitely, you know, the same song or whatever. But I don't know, something about all of Ron Goodwin's songs on this album, they sound like on the verge of turning into show tunes. I don't know how you feel.
I think that's like the capital like pop orchestra sound. It's like it could be pulled from a musical or something. But yeah, I think like I picked this song because like this was my gateway into like figuring out like this Rabbani Brothers connection in this album. So this one, like when you're talking about like, okay, what is Arabic music? What's belly dance music? What does this have to do with anything Middle East? Like this one to me, it has like that lilting and happy feel. It's like almost a little bit frantic the way the song kind of races through. And I'm like,
it sounds kind of jaunty.
It does sound jaunty. And like all those qualities, I'm like, well, like nothing else on this album sounds super Middle Eastern. There's like a rumba in here. I'm like, well, it's like rumbas can be, there are some Middle Eastern songs that have a rumba rhythm, but I'm like, this one sounds like it could be like Greek, like the tempo and the instrumentation. I'm like, well, maybe this is a Greek song. I don't really know. Or it's like Greek-ish sounding. I'm like, well, of all the things in here, it's like kind of the most Middle Eastern sounding, I guess. And this one is based on a song called Abdu Habib Gandura. And the version that we listened to together before you're listening to the show is sung by this artist Shiraz. And I somehow managed to dig up on YouTube. Somebody made a playlist of songs that are source material for this album. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. So, but it's not in the same order that they are on the album. So it's like, it's so difficult for me because I don't read Arabic. And the song titles on this album are like so super generic sounding. I'm like, I don't have any idea like how to go about finding dancing eyes and what is that in Arabic. And I can't read the Arabic script. I can't read like the transliterated one either. And when you translate stuff from Arabic, like one, the transliteration is different. So like it's spelled out in like Roman letters differently depending on who translates it. And then like if you're looking for the English translation of an Arabic song, it doesn't necessarily go by the same name everywhere. And so I don't know, maybe if a listener has a lot of time on their hands, they'll want to like one by one go through this whole YouTube playlist and like match them up to the songs on the album. It's kind of fun, and you can really like, I think doing that, it's helped me kind of like figure out like, oh, like I can kind of like, now that I know the source material, I can kind of see how Ron Goodwin got to where he got, but it still doesn't sound like Middle Eastern music. I think part of it is because like Arabic music uses like quarter tones, and so it's not like the same scale that we use. And so even I feel like everything has been kind of like polished up. We talked about on a previous episode about the differences between playing jazz straight and playing jazz hot. And I feel like it's a little bit of the same kind of thing going on here. Like Arabic music is hot, and then like Ron Goodwin like fixed it up straight.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, overall, it's funny that you said that you thought this one sounded the most Arabic, and my pick, I thought, sounded the most Arabic. But, you know, it, like you said, hearing other versions of the songs, I think did help put this album in context. And I think there is, I mean, it's like you can sort of hear undercurrents of sort of Arabic sounding music in the background of some of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like I noticed particularly on, what is the song called? The Moon and I on mm-hmm. side two. I mean, to me, it sounded like it had undercurrents of like what you might see in some sort of, you know, like 1920s Arabian stereotype, you know, movie or something. I mean, those would have been like silent movies or whatever, but like it's the kind of thing that I would have, you know, just, I guess, just kind of generic Orientalism.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I mean, the, and you saying that you thought that, you know, you guessed maybe Dancing Eyes, maybe it was Greek or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting when I was taking notes of this, like I didn't look at the sleeve and, you know, write down the song titles. And like, we got to, I think, the fourth track on side A. And I was like, oh, this song is kind of interesting, but it kind of sounds like something I might listen to or like you might hear at a wedding. And I guess it, as it turns out, the title of the song on this album is Wedding Dance. So
yeah.
I don't know, either it was or Ron Goodwin had the same impression.
Yeah, right.
But I also thought that while it sounded like something you might hear at a wedding, it also might sound like something you might listen to while riding on a gondola. So not sure about the Middle Eastern thing.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of like I feel like there's a lot of interesting things about this album, and like learning that Ron Goodwin was like such a prolific soundtrack or writer of movie scores. I think that this album, which predates most of his work as what do you call that? Like a I don't know, film scorist. It's still, I think it's super atmospheric, and I think that is like really the that's the thing that makes Exotica Exotica, is that it's not it's like so nonspecific. So even though these are songs that are based in like, in fact, like super nationalistic Lebanese music, like it's like very Lebanese. It's been like, oh, but we're going to use conga drums. We're going to use like a brass section and strings, and we're going to make
a lot of accordion, which I found weird. I mean, I guess you tell me that
that's not unusual,
but to me it sounded unusual.
Yeah.
And especially, I don't know, I mean, my exposure to accordion music comes from French music and mm-hmm. or I guess Brazilian music
mm-hmm.
because João Donato has this you know, this, like, I guess before he took to playing piano as his primary instrument for his recordings, he played accordion. And this sort of I guess the song Bizarre in particular reminds me of like something that could have been right off of one of his albums.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah, I mean, this has sort of, I guess, an Exotica feel, but it doesn't necessarily feel placed specifically on the Arabian Peninsula.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it's this whole, like, it's so meta because obviously in the Middle East, there is also this British colonialism. And so there has been in the past, like, this influence on the Middle East, like the instruments of you would find in maybe like in a British like military band, for example. Those instruments show up in Middle Eastern bands because that was like, you know, the dominant culture starting to influence the local artists. And then, like, to further complicate things, I have found that this album in particular, the songs on, like, I think 7 of the songs on this album were copied by a Hindi film scorer. And there is like some Bollywood movie. I don't know if it's just one or if it's peppered through several Bollywood movies that like took this like British impression of the Middle East and did another like Middle Eastern movie based on these songs for Bollywood.
That's pretty random.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, what are your overall feelings about this album, Felicity?
I mean, when I listen to this album, I'm like, well, this doesn't really sound very Middle Eastern to me, but I still like it. And I think it's a good match for our collection of orchestral dining music. And while I was in the car, hungrily, I might admit, like, okay, if this is like a dinner album from the 1950s, it would be like non-adventurous Middle Eastern food, like hummus and tapenade. And now the suggestion of Turkish coffee and peeled grapes, like that kind of dinner, I guess. And you'd, of course, be sitting with floor cushions.
Well, yeah. So I have to say that, like, going into this album, I definitely did not have high expectations. And I mean, you had already told me, you were like, oh, you know, I pulled this album out and it's not at all what I expected or whatever. So I went into it skeptical. But as I was listening through, I gave most of the songs a thumbs up. I think I gave three of them thumbs down. So the majority of them I liked. And like you say, I mean, it's sort of more in the dinner music genre. And I have to give credit to Sven Asmussen for really turning me on to the dancing strings or the sweeping strings or whatever, because, they feature prominently in some of these songs. And I, you know, those were amongst my favorites on this album. So overall, I would say it was an interesting pick. Maybe not something I would, play a lot, but I think it was an enjoyable album and something that, you know, may get played from time to time.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think what makes me kind of sad about this album is that there is, like, there's all this great source material, and I feel like it's been stripped of all the qualities that really make it what it is. Like, I think there is, in a lot of Arabic music, there is a little bit of this like sense of longing, and the songs sound a little bit bittersweet. And there is, of course, this amazing instrumentation with percussion, and the rhythms are so unique and interesting. And like, all of that has been erased from the music, and it's been replaced with like this capital sound, which in one way is like really, well, I would say primarily it's sad, but it's also interesting. It's worth talking about.
And I mean, probably in all honesty, what the only thing that would have caused this to have any kind of commercial value in the US, I guess.
If it had like that big band sound, you mean?
I mean, it being arranged or whatever as it was.
Yeah.
You know, more authentic music maybe would have had at the time a more limited audience.
I think so. Yeah. And this, and like 1959, this would have been like really at the very beginning of like the wave of Middle Eastern nightclubs in the U.S.
All right. Well, for more information, you can visit our show notes at livinginhifi.com/episode/58. As always, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at livinginhifi. For a longer correspondence, you can email us at feedback@livinginhifi.com. And next week, I guess we'll have something with perhaps a little bit more authenticity in terms of Middle Eastern/Arabic albums. So stay tuned for that. And thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.